If you look at our cover,
it's all in color,
you will see a variety of ocean views. One's of sunset, one is looking up into a fjord. You can call it, that's not in Norway, but you can call it a fjord. One looks out to a new land, one looks out strictly to the sea. Those views make me think of a voyage, an adventure, something there awaiting me, something exciting and new. Reflecting on that, I came across or was reminded of one of my favorite Puritan prayers, where the author says, "I launch my bark, or small boat, on the unknown waters of this year, with you, O Father, as my harbor, and you, O Son, at my helm, and you, O Holy Spirit, filling my sails. Guide me to heaven with my strength, my lamp burning, my ear open to your calls, my heart full of love, my soul free. Give me your grace to sanctify me, your comforts to cheer, your wisdom to teach, your right hand to guide, your counsel to instruct, your law to judge, your presence to stabilize. May your fear be my all, your triumphs my joy." I think of those pictures and I think of these words and a great adventure in front of whoever is taking the adventure. And unfortunately, Jeremiah didn't get those great adventures, the ones that he anticipated. Now, again, Jeremiah's situation, we're almost through with our series. He was born, almost began his work, the time either right before, right after the great revival under King Josiah, the last good king worth anything that Judah had. And it was a real revival, but particularly he saw it's not as deep as we think it is, it's not as wide as we think it is, and it's not as long as we think it will be. It's real, it's impacting people, it is making a difference, but not quite as much as we think. And so we need to be careful, folks. If we're going to take this revival seriously, this is all that must be done. And Josiah is killed in battle, and it basically is just one disaster after another. There are invasions with Babylon, the big power to the north, and on two occasions before the big fall, people are taken into exile. The prophet Ezekiel, he was somebody taken in that earlier group. And finally, and Jeremiah keeps saying to the king, this is how you need to do it. Don't be playing, little boys who play with matches get burned. Don't play the big boy game with Judah and Egypt. But the king plays it, and the kingdom falls. And Jeremiah witnesses it. Now, the odd thing is that the Babylonians actually said, "Hey, Jeremiah, you don't have to go." Maybe because they took the best of the best. He didn't make the cut. Maybe another reason. And Jeremiah, basically, his hope was to either stay with my people here, no matter how bad they are, because God's called me to serve them, or to go into exile with the people in Judah. And we'll talk more about that next week. Basically saying, yes, you're going to exile and it will be your grandkids. Some of you may come back as old people. Some of those little babies might come back as old people. But basically it will be your descendants that come back. But that's okay. God's not through with you yet. So, first choice, stay. Second choice, join the people in Babylon. Third and last choice, not even a choice, to go to the group. A few have fled to Egypt. But lo and behold, he gets kidnapped. He and Baruch, his assistant, basically get kidnapped and they get taken to Egypt. The place I don't want to go, Lord, that's where you have sent me. And yet, while he was there, he continued to serve faithfully. I mean, he has, and there's a whole section, we just got this end section, words of encouragement to Baruch. Well, basically, I mean, we're here. And did you learn anything? At one point, the group in Judah exiles in Egypt, They're worshiping the Queen of Heaven, and he's saying, wait, didn't you learn anything? We got in trouble for that. He won't hesitate to tell it like it is. Jeremiah lost out. He lost his home. He lost his preferred options. And yet, he persisted. Reflecting on his situation, then I reflect on various people that come to mind. I'm thinking in general principles, but I've also got specific people that come to mind. Of seasons of life when you may find yourself in Egypt, where it seems like people I know are in Egyptian phase, using this image here. I think beginning of school year still got me in that mindset. I think of the teachers who get assigned to the school that they did not want to be assigned. Or they got the grade they did not want to get. Or because that teacher is the newbie, the teacher got the kids that the other teachers didn't want. You know, it's they would, you know, we've been watching those kids since first grade and we're in fifth grade now. Yeah, I don't want that one. Give it, I don't know. Maybe that doesn't happen in Mesquite. Give it a looking game. Maybe that never happens in the Mesquite ISD, but it has happened in situations. And that end up year being very hard, or even someone, when a situation came to mind, an older person shared that I really want to teach in the school system, this particular system, but at the time they required teachers with experience. And so I taught in this other system who needed somebody to get my years of experience so I could go to the one that I really wanted. And so it was a short term, but she wasn't her preferred. It was, in a way, her Egypt. Maybe you've been in a place that's not exactly what you expected, but that's where you find yourself. Maybe at work, you're training the new person that really nobody else wanted to train. Or you've been given the assignment that nobody else wanted. You've been at this place. It's been hard. You find yourself in an Egypt. One of my long projects is started over 10 years ago is to read a biography of every U.S. president. And it's not like all in one year, okay? I started about 2012, something like that. And I've still got more to go. But it has been interesting reading, and particularly lately reading about Eisenhower and Truman. I'm kind of doing both of them a little bit one at a time. And seeing how Eisenhower had assignment after assignment that was good, but not the combat experience. And yet, and often even disappointed, what's this going to do long term? Then a little thing like the Second World War starts. And precisely because he had worked with various personalities and could sense troubles coming at 10 to 20 paces and knew how to work with egos, he was the one brought together to work with all of the big egos. Then went with the big generals and become supreme commander. Some of those assignments seemed like he had been sent to the wilderness, but all had prepared him. Truman had some interesting adventures, a business that was more because of the economic downturn that it failed, but a failed business. But then getting a political job, but actually being honest, and they said even though he was got it through the influence of a machine, that was not the best, not the most up and up, they said he was probably the only one who never got rich out of it, because he was very honest, but prepared in his circumstances. Winston Churchill, who had a brilliant career in the teens and the 20s, but in the 30s found himself in the wilderness. Not in government, and nobody really, except for a small circle, really wanting to have anything to do with them. But it prepared him. He said, that's, in the end, that's what prepared me for my role when I did become prime minister. There are all kinds of odd situations. Some, as I said, pretty great. Like, why am I teaching here? Why am I here? And some of these, I don't see how you're using this. Again, thinking about this message and these scenarios, I was taken back to an event, an encounter that happened at the Russian Mission Network Conference 2010 in Denver, Colorado. Our church in Columbus was partnered with a church in Moscow. And so this is just for American churches, American Presbyterian churches that are partnered with Russians. I mean, that's basically what it was. And we were having our meeting there in Denver. And there was some sort of break in the day, and people were back and sharing. And this one woman had shared, she rode Denver's answer to DART. Okay, their light rail. She was going to see something. She had taken the DART train. And it's a Saturday, so you have to wait a little bit. And she found herself in conversation, usually mainly listening, with this man. Now, he's a little odd, but instead of my female instincts, pretty much figured out he's a little odd, but he's safe. Okay? You can talk with him. I'm in an open area. I don't have to, you know, where's my purse to hit him? You know, I don't have to do that kind of thing. Maybe I just need to listen. You know, she's almost thinking, you know, I'm here for a mission conference. Oh, I need to be listening to people. And he shared, he had some big event to go to that night, and how fun his life had been in California. But he had come there to look after his mother. But again, he's talking about the fun he's having and all of that. And some wild things. He said, hey, you ought to go here, you ought to go there. And she's like, okay, that's a thought. Again, just listening to him. Well, the conversation was winding down, and you could see the train. Again, I got a straight shot, so you can see it coming a distance. And kind of wrapping it up. And she just said, time to get that spiritual moment. It's a real blessing for your mother. And just pray for you as you look after your mother. Something like that. And then he got this really happy kind of guy got very somber. And he said, you know, I really don't even like her. And she said, well, then she's doubly blessed to have a son who would still come to look after her. And then he was, well, you have a good day and be careful. There's some crazy people out there. As she got on her train, she thought, oh, Lord, thank you for sending me to this man. And I'll call him Mickey. Thank you for sending me to Mickey. And she said, I could almost hear a voice saying, no, I didn't send you to Mickey. I sent Mickey to you. She's like, and I'm not sure why. it's like 30 minutes ago, so I'm still trying to figure this out. But for some reason, he was sent to me. Jeremiah did not get what he wanted, but he persevered. Earlier spoke about kind of his secret as he's being rejected and what he has to say. Remember, at one time, all of his prophecies he'd written out were burned. Like I said, he did not have them at the at-home computer. He didn't have them on a disc or a memory. I'm blanking, but just the thing to stick in. That I've got now. He had to do it all over again. But it said in his words as he lamented that he was honest. So in the middle of all of this, he is honest and still obedient and watchful. The Lord is with you and worshipful. He knew those words that Jesus gave Paul, my grace is sufficient for you. In the commentary, I came across these words, and I'm just going to read them. No need to summarize or try to rephrase. In the Bible, Egypt is a strange place for God's people. Consider Abraham, who spent time there. Joseph, who went there as a slave and became a leader. The Hebrews, who went there to start a new life, which went well for a long time and then were made workers. And to Moses. And Jeremiah offers words of judgment on the kingdom of Egypt. But his words should also be compared with that of Isaiah, who sees Egypt as a future blessing for the world. In the New Testament, the family of Jesus flees to Egypt as political refugees. Egypt is not home for God's people, but a lot of formation for ministry is accomplished there, and God's resolve to bless comes from there. This is a place to serve in exile. Christians who feel isolated and oppressed over their circumstances, who have been forced into unfamiliar territory, or are caught up in destructive forces that overwhelm their lives, are invited to measure their lives against a scriptural pattern, including such folks as Abraham, Joseph, Moses, Jeremiah, and Baruch. Abraham made mistakes in Egypt. Joseph was unjustly imprisoned there. Moses committed murder there and struggled against Pharaoh. Jeremiah and Baruch were kidnapped and brought to Egypt. However, none of them lacked the attention of God, who remained faithful to them in times of upheaval. This did not cause their pain to go away. Their lives were gifts in service to the Lord in and through difficulties. And through their difficulties, God formed disciples. His grace is sufficient. Today, in a few minutes, we will come to this table to meet with Jesus Christ. And Jesus meets us to feed us spiritually. And today you may be in Egypt, or you're recovering from a season in Egypt, or it's coming right around the corner. Today you can meet with Jesus, for his grace is sufficient. Thanks be to God. Amen. As we prepare for our time, let us continue our worship, and let us present to God our tithes, our offerings, our gifts, and our very selves.